August 3rd, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 518 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and thank you for spending part of your day with me. Thank you for playing along with Molly Knight and I. Had a blast. Brought back trivia this week. If you didn't hear trivia, we do that with the non-Allison guests, so she doesn't have to do that every week. So we did it with Molly Knight yesterday. Had a blast. She's very smart. She took two outbursts like a genius, which made me extremely happy. But please, everybody, go buy her book. But we're back with Allison Futter today. It is post-trade deadline. Exciting times. All Jonathan Broxton. All the time. Broxton fever. I am fitting me and two of my closest associates into a pair of Jonathan Broxton pants. Anyway, here's Allison and I off for Futter and Leach. We're going to talk trade deadline, Mets, all sort of business, and then we're really going here. All right, here's Allison. All right, Allison, first off, welcome back. I won't make you tell all the stories from Cooperstown. I want to hear some of them. I want to hear all of them, but I feel like we wouldn't have time for as many other than to say that you had fun, right?
It was wonderful. I knew it was going to be great, and it was even better than I thought it was going to be. And Cooperstown is everything that you've heard it is, and then even a little bit better. It was just fantastic.
Awesome. Okay, well, good. And everybody got elected. That's the only problem with that is that there's no drama. No one ever says like, "Oh, sorry, Biggio, you're one short again." Like everybody gets in and everyone's happy. I feel like that would have caused a ruckus there if that was.
Yeah, you know, there was. Yeah, it's nobody has any interest in there being like any controversies during Hall of Fame weekend. Like, there's not a single writer there that wants anything out of sorts to happen. In fact, there was like some altercation that Reggie Jackson had with the fan at like in a restaurant, and he was signing some autographs, and the fan got in line twice, and of course Reggie, being just, you know, such a swell guy, started yelling at him, and there was an altercation, and I don't know, they had to like break him up and whatever it was. So it was like this brief story, and then it just like went away. Like it was out there, and then everyone just kind of moved past it and really didn't want to go any further with it. It's like, let's deal with this next weekend. This weekend, let's just have a glorious time in Cooperstown, and it certainly was.
There's no sadness at Disneyland. There's no crying. No. Now I know truly where and when to declare to put together my next heist. Because I feel like there's all the cops and all the journalists are just off duty that day. So I'm going to Cooperstown, and I'm wiping out a Chase Bank up there.
Exactly.
All right, so trade deadline. That was very exciting. It's very funny. You know, I find myself, and you know, you are better at Twitter than I am. You're just better at it. You're more comfortable with the medium. You're good at it. You know, like you can.
This is very timely, Will, because I just got killed by Royals fans last night on Twitter. Killed. I had to spend 2 hours talking people down from the ledge, and they were just hammering me. But anyway, go on.
You see, that's another thing too, is that like I have long given up, like unless it's someone I know already, or it's someone that like I've corresponded with in the past that I feel comfortable with. I've given up on like ever like trying to the cardinal hatred of the last 3 years. I've given up of trying to talk anybody into anything over any social media platform. I'll write my column, and I'll people email me. I respond to every email I ever receive. Email is a thing that we can actually have a real conversation, as opposed to not even 140 characters. 140 minus, you know, Royals underscore buttface underscore Balboni and however many characters that is. So. You know, so I'm just not good at Twitter. If you've even noticed, you follow me on Twitter, I'm almost exclusively, here's a thing that I wrote, here's another thing that I wrote, hey, it's Friday, have a good weekend, everybody. Like, I really just, Twitter is not, I'm not good at it. But I still read it all the time. Like, I still absorb it, I'm certainly on it all the time. I just, as someone, as a participant, I find myself backing off a little bit. And I think that, it's funny because I always thought, even when Twitter bothers me, it is never more fun than at a trade deadline in baseball or in the basketball. It's always, always so fun. And I have to say, with the Mets thing this year, I think we actually finally saw the downside of the Twitter trade deadline. The idea that Wilmer Flores is going up to bat and crying. First off, he goes up to bat, and everyone is cheering for him. He doesn't know why. And then he goes back to the dugout, and apparently someone must have just said, they're cheering because they think you were traded, but they didn't say that you were traded, which just upset them. It was confusing. And I have to say, very rarely am I like, man, I wish it was 1984 and I only had one newspaper to read and had no idea what was going on in the world outside of my newspaper. I very rarely think that in my world. As a sports fan, it's a wonderful time to consume all of this information in whatever pace you want to take it in at. But that was an example. Like, in retrospect, we were all such morons. Like, we get so excited about these things, and like, when nothing happens, we've actually just created noise and anger and frustration for like no reason.
Right. Well, the whole thing was unfortunate for so many different reasons. First of all, that Flores was kind of getting ridiculed for crying, which, you know, just bothered me. And every writer thought that he or she was like so clever in referring to the "there's no crying in baseball" line. So that got really old. The main thing that I have a problem with is, and you know, I'm critical of the media. I'm probably one of the more critical people in the media of the media, because there's so much that sort of outrages me throughout the course of a season. But it needs to be said that the reason that this stuff happens is because of the people leaking the information to the media. And there are many different reasons why front office members and scouts and agents do leak this stuff. But the fact is that that's why it's happening. So if you're giving me a nugget of information, it is absolutely 100% my job to verify it, you know, check on it, and then go with it if it's true. And everything that was reported was very true. And now we're seeing what happens in, now that we all live in real time, what can happen. And the trade ended up not happening, which happens a lot, by the way. Trades fall apart at the last minute. Physicals are failed.
Well, I mean, isn't that an argument not to report it?
There's no argument not to report. There's an argument
Let's start with Joel Sherman. Joel Sherman had this first. He said Gomez to Mets. He doesn't say Gomez to Mets pending physical.
Okay, well then he was wrong.
Yeah,
I mean,
but he's the one that started it all. And don't be wrong, it's not just his fault. But I think that is actually how it originally started. And I noticed even the next day everyone kind of taking a step back and being like, okay, so here's this trade, assuming nothing crazy happens this time. And I hope maybe that's good moving forward, that we're a little bit more careful about that.
We're never going to be more careful. Nothing is ever to change. And it was proven 12 hours later when the David Price news broke. And so my issue is that you can get the Mets front office together in a room in a meeting the next morning, and they can all express outrage to each other that this happened. And that information literally came from somebody inside that room. It's the fault of somebody inside that room that any of that even got out. That's where I have a problem.
Unless it was on the Brewer side, for what it's worth, unless it was on the Brewer side. And it does appear that someone on the Brewer side must have leaked something, because Carlos Gomez seemed to know about it. I agree with you. It's probably someone from the Mets too. And
sure.
And you know, you've been involved inside baseball longer than I have. And listen, I've been a reporter for a long time. I've always been baffled as to why anybody ever tells us anything.
Right.
Like, I don't know why. I literally don't know why they tell us anything. But what is the upside? Like, I think I wrote this in my column. I remember last year when the Braves and Cardinals made the Hayward-Shelby Miller trade. It was literally announced on the Cardinals and Braves Twitter. Like, simultaneously, they both, like, put up at the same time that they made it. Everyone was like, whoa, that's a crazy trade.
Yeah.
There'd been no talk about it. There'd been no discussion. There'd been no Miller to Braves. First goes to Jerry Krasnick or Rosenthal or so on. It just was announced that way. And I have to say, it wasn't any less fun. Like, I didn't have less fun having the news broken that way. I'm not saying reporters shouldn't break news. I'm not saying that at all. But it is strange to me. I don't understand what teams have to benefit to leak this stuff in the first place.
Well, here's where it gets kind of sensitive, because there are people who are trying to promote themselves to higher jobs. There are people who are on lower levels that would like to be general manager someday. And there are, you know, when jobs open, and you'll see people throwing out names of candidates that would be very attractive, maybe, for this particular job. And you know, that's where some of these reporters are throwing out some of these names. There's some back scratching going on. I do this for you, you do this for me. It's, you know, nobody wants to really, like, go into that, say that too much, because you know, there's some kind of code, I guess, where you just don't really talk about that stuff. But that stuff is happening all the time. And so those are the people that are trying to maybe move up in the world a little bit.
Yeah, but at least it's not like evil like the NFL, where you like like the NFL leaks stuff to their reporters and it's always like, you know, it's always like misinformation and gross. At least this is just good old fashioned horse trading, I suppose, which is still ugly, but I guess it does. So I'll keep that in mind. Whenever the first firing this year is from a GM or a manager, everybody read who Joel Sherman, that's associate. Read, and this, I'm not ripping on Joel Sherman, who I know is a perfectly nice guy. But read to see who connected to the Braves or Mets organization he tosses out as a candidate. That's the guy that leaked the Gomez trade.
Well, you know, I mean, it's so funny because think about like how, you know, people will throw out a name of just like somebody who is so respected. And this kind of happened with Bo Porter, like when the Astros hired him as manager. And you just throw out these phrases like he's the next, you know, big time manager in the making. Like the Astros needed to hire him early so that the other teams, when their seasons were over, wouldn't have a chance to hire him as their manager. And like this narrative just grew and it just grew and grew and grew to the to where Bo Porter seemed like he was going to be the next Miller Huggins. And then
he was not.
all of a sudden, like he actually was like so incapable of doing this job in so many ways. And it was like, actually, Bo Porter may never manage in the major leagues again. So that's what kind of happens with all this stuff. I believed it. I was like, oh, wow, Bo Porter. Oh, the Astros hired him so quickly. He must be, you know, the Nationals must have wanted him. And it's all bunk, all of it. It's silliness.
Thank you for using bunk. I'm a big fan of the word bunk. Yeah, I it is, but like it's just to me, just the fact that this happened so quickly now, which is fine, I get it. But like, you know, it's just it's very strange to think that. And also, you know, listen, the idea this is just Twitter. And I think when I wrote my piece, I think Joe Sheehan kind of called me out on this, I think somewhat fairly. The idea that I was like saying Twitter was just like three guys in a room constructing all this thing that happened. This is collectively what we kind of all do. And it wasn't just on Twitter. You know, I mean, listen, you know, I got an alert on my phone saying MLB.com confirms that so and so the trade has happened. Clubs have not confirmed. But, you know, like this is the official app. Yeah, this is,
yes.
This, you would think if you got an alert from MLB.com, it's fair to say that it's happened. So, I think that just blaming Joel Sherman to this, I think, is not quite fair, and I'm not. And but it's just funny how that can happen, that the story can change mid-tier, like the story can change right in the middle, and it can change because of things that happen on the field. And to me, I defended the Mets. My main thing of that comment was to defend the Mets. Maybe someone leaked out of the Mets, maybe they didn't. But certainly, I think a case can be made that someone from the Mets, that the Mets had this trade going on, someone from the Brewers or maybe a low-level person at the Mets leaked it to Sherman. But meanwhile, like they're playing a game, you know, like they're in the
right.
middle of a game. The idea that if the trade's not nailed down, because people said like, well, why didn't Collins pull him? Why didn't someone tell him? Well, maybe the trade wasn't done, and maybe they should like Wilmer Flores is on the team. You try to win games with Wilmer Flores on your team. Why pull him when you're in a game what you need to win? So I felt like that was it's very uncomfortable for me, and I think this comes down to a fundamental thing. I don't want anything I do or the idiots that I know and follow on Twitter do to actually mess with the games themselves.
Exactly.
And to me, that was the ugliness of that. Not so much that Wilmer Flores, you know, I mean, I felt bad for him. It was a tough thing, and it was certainly weirdly handled. But more to the point, we affected an actual on-field thing, and to me, that is crossing the line. That's something I don't actually want any of us to do, for good or bad, really, in a lot of ways. We're here to observe and report and comment, but generally let it work in its own ecosystem and stay out of the way.
Yeah, you wonder if they're going to move the deadline time of day again. I
yeah.
mean, it used to be midnight, and they moved it to 4, and I wasn't really sure why that was. Maybe they were doing it to avoid it happening during games, and of course there are midday games, which we know. Maybe they'll move it to noon, you know, to make sure that none of this happens. I mean, this isn't going to stop. That's my really only point, is like this taught us nothing, and nothing is going to change. Zero is going to change. There's always going to be those people out there that can't keep their mouth shut and are not going to follow protocol. So what is next? And maybe that is making it a 1 p.m. Eastern time deadline.
I remember when it was midnight, I worked at the Sporting News at the night shift. I was the only one there. If that tells you how much the trade deadline has changed. In 1998, I think it was 98. What was the year they traded for the Astros traded for Randy Johnson? In 98? 98 or 99? I think it was 98.
98,
and
yeah.
So it was midnight, and I was the only person on staff to update the homepage. And so at midnight passed, and like 20 minutes passed, and there are no trades. I was like, okay, well, time to go home. Front page headline. That's the end of the trade deadline. Nothing major. Got in my car, went home, woke up in the morning, turned on SportsCenter, and got yelled at a lot the next day because Randy Johnson had just traded, if you remember that.
That's
yeah.
really funny, because that was like one of the most crazy nights I've ever had. Like, I was working for media relations for the Astros, and my boss was on the team, on the road with the team, and Jerry Hunsicker was a GM at the time. I had arranged with him, like, I'm going to stay in the office until, like, this is before, like, cell phones and this is before the internet. Like, I'm going to stay I'm going to stay in the office till like 9 o'clock p.m. and then I'm going to go home. So he knew where to call me if there was a deal that was going to be made. It was the deadline was 11 o'clock Central Time, and so I'm laying on the couch and I'm like, I fell asleep. And 11 o'clock comes and goes, and he calls me at 11:03, and he was like, they almost did not accept this. It was like 9 seconds before the deadline that he called the league and told him about the trade, and I had to get on the phone and I had to call everybody, all the news organizations, you know, everybody locally. Nobody believed me. I was getting all the night desk people at all the news stations. And they were like, who are you? I was like, oh, really? This is true. This is true. Yeah, it was pretty nuts. It was
the low rung people like me being like, oh, I just want to go to bed. Leave me alone.
Right.
So, all right. So it's funny. We've talked a lot about the Mets. We've not talked about the fact that the Mets are the central story in baseball right now. They have.
Yay, Mets.
It is exciting. I have to say, that is, you know, I wrote a piece last week about how one thing that I've noticed about the Mets this year, because the Mets fans are generally have been furious with their team all year, and I think with some justification. You've got these great starters, you've got this kind of once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, not maybe once-in-a-lifetime, but certainly these young starters all pitching well at the same time, and they seem to do nothing with their offense, and it seems to be connected, frankly, to ownership's financial troubles. And I know Mets fans have been furious about it, and they've had their best year in like 6 years, and everyone's been so angry. But the anger is not like that, just like empty Phillies fan anger. It's just like this, like anger because we want to care and be happy so badly. And you saw this weekend after they made that suspended trade, that place felt like Pittsburgh in the wild card game.
Couple
years ago, it felt like a hockey crowd. Like just the place was shaking. It was really pretty awesome to see. I'm still not sure they're going to beat the Nationals, but I gotta tell you, almost in the span of 1 week, the Mets went from being, and this is a typical New York thing, by the way, everything is either wonderful or everything is falling apart. But going in Friday afternoon, it sort of looked like the Mets were it was LOL Mets. The Mets suck. There they go again, screwing everything up. To right now, they look like the most exciting story in baseball.
It really is unbelievable because it's been, I feel like they've been a punching bag all season. Because they had that, they had that great start, and of course then they didn't do very well. But you look, I mean, they're just like tied for first place, and it's August 3rd. It's insane. And I looked at the record, I'm like, these guys have so many wins, and all they do is get ripped. And it's really funny because you don't hear a lot about the Nationals, that the Nationals are grossly overachieving, and I mean underachieving. And I guess you can't really bash them too much because they're also in first place. So it's just this really weird thing. But never in a million years could I have ever imagined that the New York Mets would still be in this in August. I thought that they would hang around, you know, and they would be interesting. But I just felt like the Nationals were, you know, just so locked down with the rotation. And, of course, everything that everybody thought at spring training when they looked at this team on paper. And it's just amazing. I don't know. I feel like they might still be able to hang around and make September very interesting.
Yeah, and the thing about it's funny, we talk about the Mets, the Nationals have been kind of covered by the fact that everyone's just like, the Mets aren't spending money and everyone's disappointed with the Mets. But the Nationals, this was the thing all year, was you kept waiting for the Nationals to put them away. Just like to get in some sort of run, and like there's no, like, listen, nobody else in that division is any good. Miami's actually worse than people thought. Atlanta's a little bit better, but they're still a below 500 team. This is why people before the year thought, oh, the Nationals, it's not that they're going to win 100 games. It's how many games over 100 will they win with this great staff. And if you had told them that Harper was going to have this breakthrough amazing year, you'd have thought it was absolutely insane that they wouldn't win this division by 20 games. So as exciting as it is about the Mets right now, it's worth knowing that this is as much, if not more, a disappointing Nationals story. They are only five games over 500, which is really kind of nuts. If the Nationals were in, like, say, the NL Central, or even the AL Central for crying out loud, they would be looking at like 8.5-9 games out right now. And the only reason you can, the thing that we thought was going to let the Nationals take over this year is actually the only thing that's kept them alive. And it's hard to believe, particularly when people talk about the Mets, and because the Mets, you know, as whatever frustrations they may have this year, they still are going to have these young pitchers moving forward, and they're still going to be pretty good. The Nationals are starting to get going to run into some money issues. They're going to lose some of these guys, some of these starters. It feels like they've kind of loaded up for the next couple of years, and after that, maybe it's going to get their team. This is their prime to do it, whereas the Mets are just getting started. Imagine, just think about that. Imagine if the Nationals actually somehow don't make the playoffs this year, which they're frankly a half game out of the playoff race right now.
Yeah, and the thing that just kind of sticks out in my mind is really how poorly they handled when they went through that losing stretch, like in April, I think it was. And I mean, the season was only like three weeks old maybe, and they weren't doing very well, and everyone was kind of like, it was really just this kind of low attitude in the clubhouse, and people were kind of down, and there were only two guys that were really, you know, saying things like, we're going to be just fine, it's really early, and the other ones were kind of letting it get to them. It's like, wow, well, what if you have another slide? I just wonder, like, if they're not really producing, you know, toward the end of August, and you get into September, are they going to get tight? Are they going to start pressing, you know, all the old cliches that we use, but are they going to be able to handle that? And you wonder, you just wonder what's going to be, and if they have the right personalities to be able to just let all that go and just play baseball. I don't know what the answer is to that. Actually, Bryce Harper seems to be the most level-headed when it comes to that. He seems to handle the losing stretches better than a lot of the guys in that clubhouse.
Yeah, and it's, to me, that's all the even more of it. The one thing that you wondered about the Nationals coming in this year was like, well, is Harper going to be able to become a star and carry that offense? And the answer finally turned out to be yes, but yes, no one else would do anything. No, and right, they've had some injuries, and they've had, but this is still a team that has Dan Uggla on the roster.
It's crazy. Every time I see him, I'm like, really? It's kind of like when Jeff Francoeur shows back up in the majors. Like, when did that happen? Exactly. But hey, good for him.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that, like, you know, this is a team that ostensibly is supposed to be, you know, the class of this division. But it's worth doing still when you take a break, when you take a step back from the Nationals, if they get into a wild card game or if they win the division, which I think statistically, you know, odds wise, they still are favored if to win this sure division over the Mets. Then they still have Scherzer in the
yes
first round. They still have Zimmerman. They potentially have Strasburg to see what happens with him. So the idea that It's like everything now. If you just get in, all of these guys. This is another reason I'm going to talk only very briefly about the Cardinals in a negative way. The thing that worries me about the Cardinals is all of these teams that are fighting for playoff spots in the National League, with the possible exception of the Cubs, have these top tier starters. They all have these studs at the top. The Cardinals don't. The Cardinals have five really good pitchers, but they don't have this like blow away top guy. So even though the Cardinals may have the best record in the National League, I'm not convinced that any of these teams, Mets, Nationals, Dodgers, the Dodgers, terrifying right now. The Giants, like or Pittsburgh, any of these guys all have top tier pitcher, better top tier pitchers than they do. So for me, like, it's really, like, as exciting as the Mets are, and as fun as this is, and as kind of awesome as Suspedes looks in a Mets uniform, I just it's been a while we've been waiting to see, like, an actual superstar on the Mets as a hitter, and not right Suspedes as a superstar, but it's just fun to see him, like, and to hear the crowd like that. I don't know, it's the Mets, to me, if they can get in the playoffs, are legitimately scary. That's a legitimately scary team in the playoffs, and so I hope they're excited right now. We may joke about this, and in like a month, the Nationals have finally had that takeoff we're all waiting about.
Right.
And then it doesn't happen.
It's still very early. There's still, I mean, let's not forget that the season started a little, you know, started like April 6th, so the season isn't over until like October 3rd. I mean, there's like almost like, I guess, eight full weeks left, so it's a lot of baseball left.
Yeah, there's like a lot of trades to be made too. Like, we keep forgetting that, like, oh, no more trades can happen, but like, there'll be tons of trades this month, like there always are. So it feels, we just like deadlines. And speaking of which, of teams on a run and teams that are in happy land, I'm asking Nizola this, not necessarily Allison. The Houston Astros seem to have turned that back around right now. They are four games up. The Angels, it's funny, when the Angels got on their run, everyone was like, here they come. This is what people were waiting for. They've now lost six in a row, and Houston's back up, and they had that sweep. And then the Angels got swept and lost by the Dodgers. Do you feel like the trades that Houston made, do you think they're going to win this division now? Do you think that they're set up in a position to actually win this division now?
Absolutely. Assuming they stay healthy, absolutely. After that, it's no longer a, you know, this team is overachieving. I mean, look, I find this division to be just painfully weak. I cannot believe how many bad teams are in this division. It just blows my mind that the Mariners never got it together, that the A's are this bad. You know, I mean, the Rangers, I didn't expect them to be very good, but I just can't believe how bad this division is. That being said, when I look at what the Astros are right now, with the addition of Kazmir, with the addition of Mike Fiers, quite frankly, you know, Carlos Gomez, plus Carlos Correa is emerging as one of the best players in baseball already at 20 years old. Now you have, like, legitimate great players on this team. And yes, I feel that this is a better team than the Angels. I don't know how they're going to fare against other division, you know, winners. I feel like if they were back in the NL Central, they would be a very mediocre team, but it doesn't matter because they're in the AL West and it's a terrible division and the Astros are very good and they're going to win it.
Yeah, they are, what, three games behind Kansas City. For even the best record in the American League, which I would love that idea that Houston, not only do they finally break through this year, they actually end up with home field advantage throughout the entire playoffs.
You know, and the thing is, they figured out how they are winning at home. You know, and they're decent enough on the road. They're not great. They're okay on the road, and they're winning at home. And that's all you have to do to win a division. And they. You know, A.J. Hinch has made a huge difference on this team, and they're confident, and they're actually, like, having themselves a good old time. So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy to think that they're just keep teetering on the corner of, like, having the best record in the league. I don't know. The league is just kind of a weak league this year. I don't know. I can't really figure anything out at this point still, even, like, 4 months in the season. But it's going to be a really interesting October. I don't know how they're going to do under that kind of pressure in that spotlight when they're actually playing in the playoffs. But you know, they clearly were like, okay, we're going to go for it this year. I mean, I was very surprised that they traded Brett Phillips, who was one of the prospects that went to Milwaukee. I mean, that was like the one guy like, oh my goodness. I mean, he's pretty much a surefire major leaguer. Of course, we don't know. But the fact that they traded him and three other pretty good prospects, clearly they're like, we don't know what's going to happen next year. You never can guarantee anything. They're going for it. So, yes, I think they're going
to
win it.
I love it, too. And I have to say, you and I had this discussion. I've had this discussion in the past. The idea, all that stuff that they did, angering so many people, hacking into their own system and playing on the Cardinals. Wait, I'm sorry, I didn't say that. All the stuff they did that annoyed everybody and annoyed a lot of the fan base and clearing everything out and spending so little money, I have to say it's really difficult to say it didn't work.
this was going to work. I mean, that part of it was going to work. The draft is really set up to work if you do it properly. You're not up against the same kinds of things that you had before the new draft rules. So, there was absolutely no doubt.
I feel like there is, just because sometimes you see, like, the Royals would be a great example of this. Like, they're obviously having a great season. They're going for it right now, and that's awesome. But, like, okay, the Royals are not a great example. In the past, there have been great examples where teams save a bunch of money on payroll, and then when it comes time to strike after years of suffering, they don't. And this year, to me, that's exciting. The Astros are going for it. The Royals are going for it. We've seen teams like Pittsburgh in the past, or Minnesota in the past, or Tampa Bay in the past, where they've had these really low payrolls for a long period of time, and then they just need one move to push them over the top, they don't make it. For me, that's what's so exciting about Houston. Not just that they made those moves, but frankly, they made those moves, and Kansas City's going to be having trouble in a couple of years because these guys are going to become free agents. They're not going to have the money to sign them. Kansas City has their window right now. Houston is going for it the way that Kansas City is, but their window is just opening, which is to me really, really exciting. And frankly, what you want your team to do, this is the smart thing to do. It's pretty cool. And now you look at it, if you look at the wild card in the American League, the Tigers are 3.5 games out of the wild card.
Yeah,
I mean, that's amazing. Like, that whole thing is jumbled. The Angels and the Angels only one game up with the Twins for the second thing. It certainly feels like Houston is in such a good spot right now, and I hope that makes Nizola very happy.
It's just all good.
All right, that's what we want to hear. So, all right. So, where now are you going to any games this week, or are you idling for now?
Well, the team has left town, so I'm going to be idle, and it'll be an interesting road trip for the Astros. They're in Texas, and then they have a week in San Francisco. They're going to be there like 6 days. They've got a series with the A's and then an interleague series with the Giants. They have like a week-long, what I call vacation in San Francisco, which is pretty awesome for them. And, so we'll see what happens. I mean, the road is where, you know, they kind of struggle a little bit at times. And, they may, they might have a hard time winning against the Giants, I don't think it'll be too hard to beat the A's a couple times.
Okay, last thing I want to do, and I'm going to write these down because this is an idea I had. Because I've written some things the last week, all generally making the argument that we freak out too much about the trade deadline. We think everything changes dramatically, and one after the trade deadline, we forget there's like 2 months of baseball still left to go, and all sorts of weird things can happen. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a little experiment. We'll bring this up at the end of the year. I want you, if you got your computer handy, as an aid, this will help. If you can bring up the standings, I want to hear your predictions for who's going to win each division and who are going to be the wildcard teams in the American League. Don't worry, the only person that's going to care about this is me, and I won't even really care that much. But all you have to do is do that, because I want to see, because right now it feels like everything is crystallized post-deadline. We know what teams are in, we know what teams are out, we know what teams are going for it. I want to see if we're right about that. So give me your three division winners and your two wildcard teams starting in the National League.
Okay. Oh, gosh. The National League East. So I have to pick somebody?
I mean, if you say void, you'll be wrong because someone will win.
It pains me to say this, but I think the Nationals are going to still win that division.
Okay. Nationals, okay. And the American – I mean, sorry, the NL Central?
The Cardinals.
If you insist. And I also, I'll do mine in a moment. And the West?
The Dodgers.
Dodgers. And who's your wild card teams?
Okay, hang on 1 second. I need to. It's like a wild card.
I know, it's wacky. It's wacky.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, yes, the Pirates.
Pirates, yes.
And the Giants.
Pirates and the Giants. Okay.
Yes.
So I'm going to go with the Nationals and the Cardinals. And then we'll just give another one to the Cardinals. And then maybe one for the Cardinals. And then in the West, we'll go with the Dodgers. And I also will go with the Pirates. I am going to go, however, with the Mets. I think the Mets are going to make the playoffs because I'm too excited. And they're gonna overtake San Francisco in that. And I think, for the record, the Cubs have won 5 in a row. And they are totally in a great spot right now. But
absolutely.
Maybe I'm just not mentally prepared for the Cubs to win the wild.
Yeah, the Cubs are still it's the Cubs. So yeah,
exactly. Yep. I didn't say it. You said it. I didn't say it.
I know.
Okay. And American League. Who's your three teams?
Okay. Well, clearly the Yankees appear to be. Yeah. I don't know. I kind of want to pick the Blue Jays for the AL East, but
you wouldn't be alone. The people are doing it. That's not a crazy thought, really.
Yeah, but I'm gonna stick with the Yankees. They have a pretty solid lead at this point. The Royals, mm-hmm. clearly, that's not even really a race anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm picking the Astros.
Okay.
And let's see here, wild card. Okay, so I think the Angels are just gonna fall right out of this thing.
Yeah.
So I'm going with the Blue Jays. And the Orioles.
Orioles, I like it. I like it. Okay.
Yeah.
So I am also going with the Yankees, which I feel like there's a whole thing to be said about the Yankees. There's probably more than we can get into because it's a really weird Yankees team and a weird thing to.
Yes, very weird.
Kind of comfortably in ahead. And it does feel like that still feels like a lot of games for Toronto to make up. I know that Pineda's out and there's a lot of questions, but I still feel like that's a lot to make up. So I'm picking Kansas City. I also like Houston. And there's part of me that doesn't want to pick Toronto. They appear to be the best team for this spot. And also, people forget they've been a lot better than a 500 team up to this year. It's just kind of the way the games have fallen. But I am going to pick them. And because I have to say I am hanging with Minnesota. I think Minnesota is going to hang on and actually get that second wild card. So I like there's no actual logic to do that, but I'm picking it anyway. So the last thing I have for you, we're going to do this at the end of every podcast. I'm going to do it just to jinx both of our teams. I mean, both my and Nizola's team. The current Houston Astros magic number to win the American League West is 54. And the magic number for the St. Louis Cardinals to win the National League Central is 52. So we'll announce that every week. We'll see. We're going to do that every week from now on. And if the Astros fall behind, I'm sorry. I guess I'm like the guy that talked about the no-hitter.
I will always be pulling for the Pirates to win the NL Central, and probably until the day I die. So nothing personal.
I understand. You're history's greatest monster. I get it. well, for what it's worth, listen, you should just be happy, man, because, like, Houston – has a magic number.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny because in my last couple of years at the Astros, the most interesting thing that was going on was the 100 loss pool that we had going. So right around September 3rd, we would start taking, you know, we'd have our little, within our little circle, which is fine because everyone's gone now, but, you know, broadcasters and the like, and we would guess, you know, which day the Astros would lose their 100th game. It was very exciting down the stretch, let me tell you.
I'm sort of impressed you waited that long to pick a date. I feel like by mid-July, it looked like 100 losses were coming for a lot of those.
Yeah, I think maybe it was like toward the end of August. I don't think we really wanted to, you know, push it until they got to around like maybe 85 losses. But I was picking like, you know, September 18th, 19th, which was kind of early. But yeah, it was fun. It was good times back then.
This is a much better magic number, I'm certain. All right. Well, thanks, Allison. Well, we'll do this again next week. Thanks for chatting with me, and we'll update on the Astros and Cardinals magic numbers leading to the hacking World Series that I think we all know is coming.
Yes, that would be fantastic. It would be icing on the 2015 cake.
That would be a good time. All right, thanks, Allison. I'll chat next week.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks to Allison Furter. You can follow her on Twitter at Allison Furter, AlysonFooter. This is the Leach Experience Podcast, Footer and Leach edition. Please rate and review us on iTunes. The music for the Sundogs. We'll be back next week. See y'all.